I felt as if I were a grain of sand in a huge, immense nothingness, with a sense of not being anchored to anything, free-floating with nothing else except myself as this microscopic thing. It is so hard to describe how absolutely terrible this madness, this alien psychosis, feels. I've actually given up trying to tell people about it. Because every time I have, they've assumed what I'm trying to say is that I'm psychotic, or fear that I'll become psychotic, or that I've been psychotic. And that isn't the case at all. Now, as an adult, I've come to realize that I am normal and I don't have to fear this madness. I'm not even sure that a human being could experience such a mental state. Because it isn't human. In the last few years, I've gotten into consciousness research, which led me to research on neuroscience and the brain, which led to research on schizophrenia. In reading about the symptoms of schizophrenia, I've begun to see just how many of the experiences that close encounter experiencers report sound exactly like the reports coming from schizophrenics. I've been trying to figure out what the difference is between the 62. The typical schizophrenic patient seems to be experiencing a heightened sense of everything that comes into their mental framework. Everything they sense is very heightened, very accentuated. Even when drugs are used to tone this down, their experiences may not be as exaggerated, but are still, at times, very bizarre. I feel that the schizophrenic patient is open to input from all kinds of realities, not just this one that we call now and here. But I have no way of proving this. This research, however, did help me to realize what the beings were assisting me with. Because when I was young, I seemed to be much more open to everything coming in, too. Not just from the past, but from all kinds of other dimensions and realities. Even now, as an adult, I've been aware from time to time of myself coexisting in this dimension and in another simultaneously. But I can still see that I am here. I can differentiate this reality from others that may be impinging on me. For the schizophrenic, even if the input is toned down with drugs, it's still bizarre, because they don't seem to have the built-in sense of differentiation. And if I had not had my training, this very rigorous, intense training throughout my childhood, I could have ended up like that, too. In August of 1991, this yellow light came into my bedroom. Up until that point in time, I really did not want to remember any more about my encounter experiences than I already knew. After that night, however, my life changed 180 degrees because, in there, morning, I had to remember. I felt as if I had to immerse myself in it. I read everything I could about the topic, and I joined MUFON, Mutual UFO Network, and other groups for UFO experiencers. And in 1994, I started organizing awareness programs in Chicago to promote public awareness of the facts about UFO-related issues, bringing in well-known speakers and talking to the media. As executive director of Operation Right to Know, I helped to get petitions out to our Congress people and to the president, demanding that the government release information on UFOs to the public. We demonstrate quite a bit, too. We were at the White House in the summer of 92 and the spring of 93, and we're making plans for 99 now. I've slowed down recently. Now I'm researching and writing. I've done a lot of research on modern physics, consciousness, and the connection with extraordinary experiences. My own set of experiences and all the questions I have about them has led me to do a lot of reading in physics, especially the physics of higher dimensional space. I've studied Riemann's theories of higher dimensional space. Georg Friedrich Bernhard Riemann was a very brilliant mathematician in the early to mid-1800s. He proved the existence of 10 dimensions, and as far as I know, that proof still stands. Most of the research in modern physics these days deals with problems in dimensional space. There's a branch of mathematics, too, that deals with the behavior of objects in higher dimensional space. 62. Many of the extraordinary experiences I've had dealt with making connections or relationships with other life forms in other dimensions and other realities. I am using the theories of Riemann and modern physics that deal with hyperspace in order to show how they build a bridge to consciousness because, during so many of the experiences I have had, I've been aware of my consciousness going, and going into some other reality. This has caused me to think about dissociative disorders, too. For the most part, mental health professionals will use this diagnosis without any understanding of where the person is going when they dissociate. I have been very aware of my consciousness, whereas a lot of people have never felt their consciousness take flight, and this has provided me with input that I primarily see as relative to schizophrenia, but also possibly to multiple personality disorder and other dissociative disorders. I want to establish the basis for other dimensions and flights of consciousness. Once I can establish a scientific foundation for this, then I can provide experiential material to illustrate as practical applications of these theories of physics. For example, in May of 1994, there was an incident involving an otherworldly being. For a day before the incident, I had been experiencing a lot of anxiety in response to a letter from my friend Dad. The day of the incident, my anxiety level was extremely high. All I could do was to get into bed that night and just curl up into a ball. I just lay in bed, awake. 63 I was facing the windows and watching the full moon rise. It eventually rose out of sight. Shortly after, another moon took its place. This object resembled the first one in every way. Now I'm not even sure the first object was a real moon. I'd assumed it was, because it was a full moon night. I was startled to see the second moon, but I was able to convince myself that maybe the moon could come back. It is so easy to do this at times. When your reality is seriously challenged, you can believe the most ludicrous things. Your mind tries to keep everything in balance. The object began to move from pane to pane, and began moving closer. Then it began to expand and contract. I was beginning to get the sense that although it was identical to the first object, it couldn't be the moon. And suddenly, it shot right through the eye window at me. It was like a white-hot baseball that passed through the glass and the window fan, passing through just like they weren't there. At first, I held up my arms to protect myself because the light was coming right at me and I thought it was going to hit me. But then, I recognized it. I definitely recognized this white light. I don't know as what, now. But it was like something that I had dealt with a lot. And I began to embrace the light. Only, I could get just so close. There was like a force field emanating from it, and intense pressure, so my arms could only get so close. I began talking to the intense white light. I just started saying, "Please take care of Ed. Please take care of Ed. Thank you, thank you, thank you." As I said, thank you, all of the horrendous anxiety I had been suffering from just instantly drained away. Instantly. Never in my life have I felt like such a whole person. I was in a world where nothing existed besides myself and the light. There was no rest of the world. There was only me and the light. Physically, we were in the bedroom. But we were not in the bedroom. We were in a place within a place. Then there's a gap. I don't have any awareness of how I moved into this next scene. But the next thing I knew, there was this small, golden ball of light about 3 feet from my head, just staring at me. And I thought, yeah, I think that's Ed. Isn't that odd? There have been instances reported by people who have also had these white-hot baseball-like lights shoot toward them. And then, the light or the ball sort of unfurls into some sort of being, like a light being of some kind. If I hadn't lost consciousness, perhaps I would have seen this being. I did ask Ed about it later, and he didn't notice anything. So the only person who was helped was myself, which is kind of strange. But I have noticed that when one is concerned about others and is seeking help for someone else, often the beings will appear. And if you want something for yourself, often they won't. One day not too long ago I was walking into my bathroom when I suddenly remembered I'd began to actually relive what it was like to be in the presence of what I call the higher beings. It was very extraordinary. My first impression was the sense of oneness that I felt with these beings. It was timeless, with no beginning and no end, a kind of love that always was. It was like a union of spirit or soul with everything that is. The sense of security was indescribable. These beings have a love that can never end. They have transcended self. And because of this transcendence, there is no meaning to the word death. This kind of love is much more abstract than our electrochemical type of love, and it doesn't have the excitement quality to it and the possessiveness that we feel. It even transcends what we call unconditional love. Their love is not like ours at all. That's why it felt so secure to me. Their love is forever. This is where human beings have to evolve. If we are to survive as a species, and if our planet is to survive, ultimately we will have to get to a point where we are no longer totally engrossed in self. On that day in my bathroom, this is what I saw. Whether we humans like it or not, we will evolve to that stage. People I talk to about this, including some experiencers, feel that it means we must give up our individuality. And this is not the case at all. Not at all. It is a oneness of spirit, not of the individual mind. It is hard for humans to see that there is individualism in other species. It is hard for us to comprehend anything but what we are. If it's not like us, we think it couldn't exist. Actually, I think this is why 66, some of the beings I'm dealing with are here, to expand the consciousness of humankind. So that we realize that we are part of a huge cosmos teeming with life. We are about to move out into space. We are ready to really explore space. But our spiritual and mental evolution is so underdeveloped. It's just not keeping up with our technology. That is what I think the beings have been doing with me, assisting me in my spiritual and mental evolution, expanding my consciousness with the exposure I've had to other realities. I've seen so much in the contact experiences I've had. But it took a lot of prior training and care on the part of these beings, training that started in my childhood, so that I would be able to handle all that I've seen and still stay anchored in this world. I see it as a kind of training in groundedness. Even though I was having very far out experiences, I was being trained to stay anchored to something. I often wonder why it is that everybody who has had close encounter experiences has not gone through this same training. Unless they have but don't remember it. Experiencers often have difficulty just coping with life. I've seen this in my support group. They find it difficult to hold a job, to try to stay normal, and to be productive. This can result just from having encounter experiences. Until the mental health community can get up to speed and start seeing the bigger picture, we are going to have trouble moving forward in our consciousness expansion. Personally, I feel so lucky, I just feel fortunate to have had these kinds of extraordinary experiences, this kind of contact. And I feel so humbled, I guess, by the whole thing. And by the fact that the beings have helped me, trained me in these ways. One fellow in my support group, the same person who was at the contact session with me, relates how I one time, when he was on a spacecraft and asked questions of the beings, he was told that many seeds are planted, but only a few come to fruition. He thought this meant that many seeds were defective, physically defective. But I think they were referring to growth and evolution. I think some of the beings help to nurture these seeds that they plant, and tend to them throughout their lives. For some purpose, and I think that purpose is to broaden and expand the consciousness and awareness of humanity. Chapter 4, Connie Eisel, Near-Fatal Accident and the Rip in Time and Space. Originally from California, Connie Eisel began working on the Sacramento cable television series UFO Connection in 1993. That same year, she founded a support group for extraterrestrial encounter experiencers, with meetings held monthly in her home. Since her recovery from a near-fatal automobile accident in 1995, Connie has made some significant changes in her life. At age 42, she is now a newlywed and a college student majoring in psychology. She lives quietly in Colorado with her new husband and her teenage daughter by her first marriage. Connie wrote to me after reading about my book project in a newsletter for experiencers. She included her address, but did not provide a phone number, and then she moved. And moved again. Her letter was intriguing and I felt that her story of celestial healing was an important one, so I spent several weeks attempting to track her down, leaving odd-sounding messages on a long chain of anonymous-sounding phone machines. Connie finally got the message, and our interview was on. A youthful and high-spirited woman, Connie laughed readily at the bizarre twists in her life story. She shared openly the pain as well as the humor of her varied experiences with the celestial beings who have so influenced and possibly saved her life. E4 1992. I did not recognize the many unusual Aishan of my life as being connected to the extraterrestrial phenomenon. I saw the subject of beings from outer space as tabloid hype, sci-fi, or mild madness. However, I did believe in angels and spirit beings because several childhood experiences had opened the door for such possibilities. When I was around 5 years old, an angel came into my room one night. Now, I don't know whether the angel was a reality or a memory created by an overactive imagination, but when I was 16, I had another angelic experience. I was walking down a steep road at night in such a deep level of despair that I wanted to die. My hopelessness was overwhelming. As a large diesel truck whisked by, I thought, "There goes my chance." It could have hit me and all this pain would be gone. From a distance, I heard another truck rumbling my way and I walked to the middle of the road. A voice said, "Run. Run for the lights." The road I was on led to a little mountain town. The streetlights a blur in the distance. I looked for the source of the voice, which was clearly not in my own head. But there was no one around. I looked toward the lit town ahead. "Run. Now," said the voice. Suddenly, I realized what I was doing and sprinted to the side of the road. The truck whizzed past. I didn't stop running until I was safe beneath the streetlights of the town. Another time, I heard the voice not inside my head say, "Love you." I was in bed alone and looked all around for the source of the voice. I even looked under the bed. By then I was totally awake and alert. "She heard us," said the voice, followed by a chorus of giggles. Thus, my view of the universe had expanded enough to include angels and spirit beings. But my universal view did not include extraterrestrials. I never thought that beings from other planets could interact with humans in the complex, mysterious ways I had experienced for most of my life. So many of my own experiences defied logic. I passed them off as dreams but sometimes questioned my sanity. When the dreams began persistently seeping into my waking reality, however, it became increasingly difficult to ignore the oddities. By 1992, I could no longer deny that something truly bizarre was occurring, and not just in my mind. I needed some answers. I decided to do some research, and began to seriously explore the extraterrestrial phenomenon. The reading material I found at the time was frightening. I was only able to move through the fear of negative possibilities, fear of the unknown, and fear of losing my marbles after I reached out to others who were having similar experiences. My fear finally turned into excitement as I began to look at the grander picture. I was being provided with an opportunity for learning and spiritual growth through actual experience. Eventually, I settled into the new reality I found myself in and marveled at the beauty of the mystery. The ETs are not too pretty to look at, though. One being I see frequently has a hideous head he hides behind a bright glow, and a long thin torso that moves like an insect's body. He reminds me of a praying mantis. This being seems to be an advisor or teacher, whereas the doctors are short little beings. Being examined or operated on by a human doctor is not exactly fun, so being examined or operated on by non-human doctors with big bald heads and big black eyes can be even more uncomfortable. Yet, I have no complaints. Most of the unpleasant parts of my experiences merely linger in the shadows of my unconscious, within a mental anesthesia of sorts, while the physical results of my experiences have been wondrous. I don't understand the methods behind or reasons for all that the extraterrestrials have done to me. But I certainly appreciate the benefits and comforts that have resulted from the procedures. For example, in 1989, I received an ET health checkup, during which they injected me with a clear gel, similar to white grape jelly. I was informed that underscore this was for my benefit, that this was for healing. There were also lights involved in the procedure, but the memory is hazy and dreamlike. The jelly-like substance was very real, however, and I had to wash it off in the shower when I awoke from the dream. I had been experiencing intense uterine cramping and discomfort before this dream, and had made an appointment with my gynecologist. By the time of my scheduled visit, however, the symptoms had disappeared and the doctor found nothing wrong. For the next 8 years, I never caught a cold or flu. In 1992, I attended my first UFO conference, a wonderful gathering of experiencers and explorers of the ET phenomenon. The speakers had the effect of taking out the sting and introducing the awe. Meeting others, some 400 in attendance who were experiencing the ETs, helped me to understand that if I was indeed entering the world of insanity, I was not going alone. As one of the speakers described something called ET fingerprints, I glanced down at my knee with its three little bruises, perfectly spaced, just like fingerprints. The knee was arthritic, the result of torn cartilage surgically removed several years earlier. But from the day I spotted those fingerprints, I have not experienced even the slightest arthritic pain in that tilde knee. In November of 1993, my doctor informed me that I had cervical cancer. I reached out to friends from my ET experiencers support group. Many were knowledgeable about alternative healing methods. One person projected energy from a distance, and I could actually feel it. Another flew from Arizona to my home in California to bring me a healing device, which smelled terrible, like ozone. Someone else suggested that I ask the ETs to fix the cancer. I did not do so, however, because I wasn't sure how to ask. After all, the ETs don't just sit down and chat with me over coffee and cookies. But they did seem to be popping in quite often around that time, a few times a week, or so it seemed. Maybe the ETs fixed the cancer, maybe not. Perhaps the love of my friends was enough to fix it. After my hysterectomy, the doctor told me the pathology report indicated that there was no cancer detected. In November of 1995, I experienced another ET healing. This experience changed me in ways I cannot even explain. The changes were not just physical, but mental and, especially, spiritual. My friend Dan was driving us home one cold night when our truck began skidding across an icy mountain bridge, spinning from one guardrail to the other. I envisioned us flying over the side of the bridge, but we didn't. Or did we? I have a distinct memory of the truck flying off the highway bridge, falling toward the cliffs below. In midair, I saw what I understood to be a rip in time and space. A brilliant light coming from within this rip contrasted sharply with the black night sky. I felt myself enter the rip, where I met with light beings, each formed of little sparks of energy that glowed together to form a single entity. We communicated wordlessly. I noticed that I, too, was energy, without a body structure. This was oddly familiar to me. Time and space were non-existent in this place. It seemed as though I had always been there and would always be there. But I understood that the part of me that entered through the rip in space had to go back out again. I understood that a mistake had occurred and would be corrected. I understood so many things, which I seem to have forgotten. Much of the information I understood then does not pertain to this reality anyway. Suddenly, I was back in the truck. It was as if no time had passed, but I had been gone for what seemed like an eternity. The truck was stalled near the end of the bridge, parallel to the guardrail. There was barely enough room for me to open the passenger door and squeeze my way out. We were inspecting the smashed truck when we heard another vehicle approaching. One minute I was stepping toward the door of the truck, the next minute I was falling over the guardrail. The oncoming car had also slid on the ice, smashing into our truck, which then dragged me some 8 feet before knocking me off the bridge. I fell about 6 feet onto a cliff below, landing next to a safety fence that saved me from rolling farther down the cliffside. If I had fallen off the bridge any sooner than I did, I would have dropped at least 400 feet. At the hospital, I was informed that my right leg would have to be removed in order to save my life. The chaplain spoke with me as if I were about to die. But I couldn't die, my daughter still needed me, with or without my leg. For the first time, I requested the aid of the ATs, adding, "If at all possible, I'd like to keep my leg." It was an extraordinary feeling to wake up, alive. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw an ET, a very tall being with whom I was familiar. When I turned to look at him directly, he was no longer there. But I felt that he was watching over me, and that he had done something inside my head. The nurse immediately reassured me that my leg was still there, pulling the covers aside so that I could see for myself. As grossly mangled and painful as it was mine. My leg, my experience. During my month-long stay at the hospital, the doctors called me their little miracle or miracle legs. A few months after the accident, I awoke for the first time without pain. My room smelled terrible, like ozone. Within a few hours, the aches and pain I was living with at the time returned. As I recovered from the accident, I had a lot of time for deep thinking. I re-evaluated my life. I learned to discipline my mind, to accept each day as underscore it came, to appreciate the little things in life as gifts. I put my life in the hands of God. And I discovered that I had a new way of sensing, a new way of experiencing. Somehow I felt released from an emotional and spiritual prison. I became more tolerant, mellow, compassionate, intuitive. My previous life was shattered, a new one had begun. Now, several years later, I walk without a limp. If not for the scars and occasional back pain, I could pass off the accident as a long, vivid dream. Den remembers seeing the rip in time and space, but he does not recall passing through it. My daughter Cassie was 15 at the time of the accident. She became a wonderful source of comfort for me, her hands better than pain pills. Cassie has healing hands. She also has vivid memories of ET encounters and UFO dreams, physical markings, 3 a.m. wake-ups, and other typical signs of ET experiences. See Appendix. A year ago, a female ET walked into Cassie's bedroom, through the wall and stereo, and my daughter was paralyzed with fear. But when the ET hugged her, my daughter said her fear eased. Cassie recalls meeting her red-haired ET sister with big alien eyes during the experience. When she was 11 years old, Cassie had a dream about being in a classroom where an ET was instructing the group of children on the structure of the universe and, she recalled, many, many numbers. The unusual experiences associated with extraterrestrial encounters have touched most of my family. My mother has conscious, vivid recall of ET experiences. My sister recalls some very disturbing experiences, but has been complaining recently of feeling abandoned because the ETs have not been around. My 8-year-old niece has been sharing her ET experiences since she was 2 and the bunnies without ears began taking her for rides in the planes without wings. At age 2, my niece was discovered floating face down in the backyard pool. There was no water in her lungs. The little girl said that an angel was holding her up in the water, helping her to breathe. Right now, I am pursuing a degree in psychology. My interest lies in emotional and spiritual healing, which plays a large role in physical healing. The body, mind, and soul are all intertwined, creating the perfect changes necessary. I have learned the healing power of touch. I have always believed in the power of prayer, but my understanding of how it works has changed. It is the intention that moves energy. The feeling of love is the energy that heals. One time, I was waiting in the doctor's office with a fellow who had also been in an auto accident. He told me he was not doing well, and since several operations had failed, he would have to lose a leg. Naturally, I felt much empathy. pretending to read a magazine. I sent him healing energy, praying for spiritual assistance. I could feel him rejecting the energy. He even got up from his chair to sit on the opposite side of the room. Later, I overheard two doctors trying to convince him that there were other options available other than amputating his leg. Lately, I have noticed that ET communication often comes through to my consciousness in the form of my own thoughts. With everything mingled together, I am not sure which thoughts are truly my own.